The NBA schedule finally came out. I'm Brian Gibberman on the Podium Game Podcast, joined by Matt Moore from CBS Sports. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, before we get to the schedule stuff, Podium Game is part of the HP Basketball Network. This is something that you've been working with for a long time and are very mainly responsible for. What are you trying to get out of everything on the network?
Well, I think, you know, Podium Game is a little bit different. I think the biggest thing that we want to do is we kind of found that there's this whole interest in the league that the idea for so long was that you needed to niche things down on a team level. So you're seeking out, you know, fans of certain teams within the subset of the NBA, within the subset of sports fans. So you start like sports fans and then NBA fans, or I guess basketball fans and then NBA fans and then like Kings fans and then like rabid Kings fans. And what we found is like, the league, I think more than really any other, has general sport fans. There are a lot of people that love the league in general, and they're less even attached to their teams than they are to necessarily their, like, the league itself. Like, they want their team to win, but they're more interested in what goes on with the league as a whole. And I think that, you know, from there we started looking at the ideas of, you know, what are people interested in? And we thought there was a market for people to want to talk about the business of the league, and that's why we started Mid-Level Exceptional. But there's room to talk about like contracts and how does the cap work. Part of the thing for our information sites, I think, is that my big draw was I wanted to see, like, are we asking the right question? So when we look at cap structure and cap exceptions and how the league is operating, and we talk about the lockout and we talk about revenues and we talk about all these things, are we asking the right questions? Are we exploring these things in the right way? And that extends over into Nylon Calculus, which is our stats blog. Are we asking questions the right way? We don't necessarily want to find the answers. It's, are we looking at things in the right way, and how can we explore these things? And Podium Game, you know, for me really was, can we look at the league from a perspective that's not written? Because so much of what the Paroxysm does is entirely written word. You know, can we look at the situation and how the league is expressed and talk about it in podcasts and do videos and have images and do all these fun Photoshops? And Podium Game is supposed to be fun. I hope it's going to be fun for people. I hope they're going to enjoy podcasts like yours. I hope that they're going to enjoy all the content that we have. We just really, the goal of Paroxysm has always been, let's make people enjoy the NBA more. And I think that, more than anything, is really where the network is sprung from.
It's funny, the grand scheme of what you just talked about there leads very much into what some of the questions I have with the schedule, which I'm going to get to shortly. Let's just start. I wanted to have someone on to talk about the schedule, and I was just going through my Twitter, and you seem to be far and away the most excited out of anyone that writes about the NBA, about the NBA with the schedule. What aspect of it do you enjoy so much?
There are several elements. I mean, one is, it's games, right? Like, we're stuck on this off season, and I've got, like, you know, what have I got to get excited about? I've got FIBA, which I don't care about. I know I should. I recognize that I should care. I do not. I've got, you know, waiting for the next potential arrest to happen, which is never fun. And then from there, it's all, like, especially on Twitter, like, we turn to turn and devour ourselves, right? Like, it turns into these conversations about the nature of basketball Twitter and how these things are constructed. So for me, the schedule is an opportunity to look at what next season going to look like. It's when we start to turn our real attention not to the summer and what happened in terms of the off season, but to what the next year is going to look like, and looking at, oh, they've got to travel to, you know, they've got X many back-to-backs, or like the Grizzlies have a really tough opening schedule, or like February through March is brutal for them, and looking at, it's also an opportunity for me personally here in Denver to start looking at the Denver schedule and start going, who am I going to interview and when? Who am I going to target for features? And looking at what are the kind of spots in the schedule for me to target to go places to talk to guys. And so I just think it's something to get excited about. I think the getting excited about things is good, and there's kind of been a backlash against that. Like, part of the conversation on Twitter a lot is, like, why do we care about the schedule? Let's wait for the actual games. I'm like, well, I'm going to wait for the actual games. I have no choice but to wait for the actual games because of the space-time continuum. I don't have any choice over that. But what I do have a choice over is getting excited about this versus the ex-FIBA team that I know nothing about nor care.
Do you so this is basically a transition time for you. Do you think there's any sort of, do you think there's significant advantages within each team's schedule? Do you think certain teams are set up better than the better than the rest, or you think it's fairly even across the board?
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole Larry Bird thing, right? Of like, you get 41 home, you get 41 away, which turned out to not be accurate last season because of the Mexico City game. Like, the Wolves did not have 41 home games. I'll tell you this. I covered the Nuggets. I've been here since 2011, or 2012, rather. And their 2012-2013 season, they started with, I think, half of their road games were in November and December. So they had half of their road games done before Christmas. That's an absurd amount when you consider the other 4 months that the league takes up during the season. So they started off really rough. This is a new team trying to get to use the new players, and they were having to do it on the road consistently against what was at the time a really pretty good schedule in terms of strength of schedule. I think those things matter. I mean, we look at, you know, Basketball Reference and their SOS metrics and how that impacts the SRS and what they end up looking like as far as adjusted. There is a matter of schedule adjustment. Like, if you play in the Eastern Conference, yes, your competition will be weaker, but then there's also subsets. So this year, if you play in the Southeast Division, you're going to have a pretty competitive time of it, versus if you play in the Atlantic, you've got a bunch of trash. Like, you just got
Hey, come on, take it easy.
No! I will not take it easy. Like, you know, the best team in that division is Toronto, and Toronto's pretty good, and then the Nets are okay, and then the Knicks are starting Jason Smith at center. Like, this gets dramatically worse. Like, Boston's like third best player is what, Jared Sullinger? I mean, it's rough. Versus, you know, you look at the Southwest Division, and they of course have the. So when the other, but that's part of it, right? Though is take the Western Conference. So if the Grizzlies face Boston, like, oh, that's an easy game. But if they face Boston in a road fourth game in five nights, that's all of a sudden a tough game to win. Like, that stuff winds up mattering. So when everyone goes, like, oh, you play the same amount of games as everybody else, well, you do. But the way that the schedule works out, it does change things. And if you want the best proof of that, look at how Portland has performed the last 2 years in the first half of the season versus the back half of the season. Their schedule has been easy up front, tough at the end, and they've had tail-offs in both years, largely in impacted by the fact of their schedule and because they stopped winning a bunch of close games, which was just an outlier.
So when the NBA is putting their schedule together, what do you think their main objective should be?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I start with, like, the national TV stuff. That's where I start. It's like, you need to put the best product forward. But you also need to kind of advance the idea that Silver kind of has hinted at, which is they want to have competitive balance, but the reason they want competitive balance is they want what the NFL has, which is they have 32 actualized, activated fan bases. So no matter how bad you are, those teams have rabid interest because at least for the first 4 weeks of the season, fans tend to think that their team has a shot at winning at least something significant. They really do think that's never going to be possible in the NBA because you're going to know pretty early on the gap between you and the championship, and 82 games makes it hard. Like, you can't go on a run. You have to go on a three-month run to cover up if you're a bad team in the NBA. But what they want is, but as it relates to the schedule, I think they need to put more of an emphasis on having teams play that are good versus teams that have big markets. I understand the ratings, but you also need to promote the fact that the NBA is worth watching on a night-to-night basis, not just these regular games. So it's like a self-defeating prophecy, right? Where, you know, the Lakers pull in the biggest ratings, so they put the Lakers on, but the Lakers are terrible, so they don't attract anybody else, so nobody watches the rest of the time because all they see are the Lakers. And the Lakers are already going to pull in ratings because of who they are, and I get that you want the ratings, but at some level you need to use it as a promotion for the league overall. Like, the Lakers have 20 non-NBA TV national television appearances. 20. For a team that finished, what, 7th? I mean, it's a nightmare. Versus you look at, like, the Blazers, and they've only got 16. But the Blazers are in a remarkably fun team that plays in a high-interest atmosphere in terms of the Rose Garden is an amazing place to not only watch but broadcast a game. And then you got things like Anthony Davis is on national television twice next season. Twice. And you can say, yeah, but the Pelicans are terrible. The Lakers were worse. And I'm not saying the Lakers shouldn't be on. The Lakers should be on between 15 and 18 times. But some of those other teams need to get more. Like the Memphis Grizzlies were a Western Conference runner-up 2 years ago, an underrated seventh seed last year that took the Thunder to seven games in a year in which they had a massive spate of injuries. They have one non-NBA TV national television appearance. That's not putting your best product forward. And I'm not saying that we need to ignore these markets. Those markets like the Knicks and the Lakers still need to have a huge level of emphasis, but they need to do a better balance of it. Beyond that, you know, I think it's hard. I think scheduling the NBA is hard because you've got stuff like these arenas book things like concerts and they have to work around those. These arenas have hockey games and they have to book around those. They have prior arrangements like the Spurs. Like, you cannot move the rodeo. Like, the rodeo is a massive source of income for the city of San Antonio. You can't move that. So you have to work around these things. I think they do a pretty good job. Everyone wants to talk about the back-to-backs, and I would love to see the elimination of back-to-backs. I've come around on the schedule. I used to say that I wanted 82 games because I wanted as much basketball as possible, and I've kind of chilled out on that and come to the point where I'm like, no, we could do it with less games. But I also know that's never going to happen because if you say it to the owners will say, well, I want the money. And you say, well, yeah, but this would be better. And they say, okay, well, if the players take less, we could do that. And the players are like, well, I don't want less money. So it's never going to go anywhere. We talk about shortening the schedule, and it's a great idea. It's not going to happen because of the money.
The first part of what you said was something I wanted to get into. Kevin Draper actually brought that exact point you did on Twitter. And I actually pulled those tweets to read those to you, but I don't need to do that since you made the same exact point. Yeah, you have the Knicks with 16, Miami with 16, Chicago 25, Cleveland 25, Oklahoma City 25, Clippers 23, Lakers 20. And then we have Atlanta, Charlotte, New Orleans with 2. Minnesota with 2 is going to have the number 1 overall draft pick. Memphis and Utah with 1 each. Utah, if anyone who paid any attention to Summer League, I understand that it was kind of easy for the people from Utah to get there. But the amount of excitement that Dante Exum brought into those games was really strong. And then Orlando, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee all have 0, who they're not great teams, but they have players on them that people want to watch. I don't understand why there can't be a little bit more of a balance to the schedule. As you said, I'm not saying not put the Knicks on or Miami on a large amount, but there's no reason not to have these teams on at least 4 or 5 times a year.
Well, I can understand some of it because, like, honestly, having watched the Sacramento Kings way, way too much and terrible, like, Pistons, I've watched so many Pistons games through the years. Like, the Pistons were kind of a league pass favorite of mine until last year, and last year was somehow worse than expected. But, I can recognize how bad they are for, like, a national television audience, and even the Grizzlies to an extent, right? Like, yeah. The Grizzlies only need to be featured in matchups in which they're going to be competitive. Like, I would never put Grizzly Spurs on national television because the Spurs are going to kill them. And the Grizzlies don't play appealing basketball. Like, that combination is deadly. You want to put, like, and even, like, Grizzlies-Pacers, which got the MLK Day game last year. Like, you want, like, a contrast of styles. Like, take Suns and Grizzlies. Like, that's a game you want to put on national television because it's, like, good offense versus good defense. And you get a high capacity for that actually being compelling. So the people watching in, like, bars and restaurants are going to look up and go, oh, this is actually a really good game. You want to engineer those kind of constructs. And they have a hard time predicting those, which is why they tend to go with what they know. At least that's what it seems like to me. I don't have firsthand knowledge of that. The other thing to keep in mind here is the real problem is actually not the schedule that they release in August. The problem is that they have eliminated their ability to flex. In 2007, 2008, I wrote a series of posts for Paroxysm when it was in its infancy, and Paroxysm was actually a pretty terrible blog then, but I wrote about how the league desperately needs a flex option. It needs to be able to remove these teams and add better teams to be able to, especially when there's like a really compelling game, they need to be able to broadcast those. You know, there's exceptions, like when the Heat were on the winning streak, ESPN shelled out and got a few more games on national television, but in general, like, they just don't use that option hardly ever. And I think that that's a real problem for them. In that you need to be able to access these bigger interest games, and you need to be able to, like, show the Lakers for the first half of the year. Like, that first game is going to be huge because it's Kobe's first game back, and that's fantastic. But when the Lakers are awful in March, we should be able to be like, all right, we're going to scrap, you know, Lakers-Knicks. Like, that's going out the window. No one, like, it will still draw ratings, but is it going to draw higher ratings than, you know, the Pelicans are in a playoff hunt and Anthony Davis is just tearing it up and on an obscene roll, is that going to be bigger than Pelicans, Blazers, or something else? They need better ways to be able to manage this. And some of that comes down to, like, scheduling, right? Like TNT, like, they only schedule certain games on Thursdays because that's like TNT's night and it doesn't want to have to compete. The problem with that is if there's no other game, TNT can't switch out because there's no one else to go to. They got to keep a few games in their back pocket. Like if Victor Oladipo for some reason, or Aaron Gordon, or the other kid, I forget, Elfrid Payton, if any of those guys go like ballistic and are just absolutely showing off and are like the talk of the league, you're going to look like an idiot when the Magic are never on television and nobody can see them. You need to be able to change these things to capitalize on the budding stars to get more people interested versus, you know, watching Ryan Kelly in March.
I think the Suns actually got flexed in to national TV a couple times last year, so they do it very occasionally. My idea for this is, what about having TNT, you don't stick it on one of them, you kind of have it rotate on a weekly basis, but do like a young play and brand it as like a young player showcase. And like, so the Pelicans get on, and you can time it out like you talked about. You put them on against like a better team, but make sure that better team's like on the back end of a back-to-back or at the end of a 4 games in 5 nights. So you can kind of, you know, you're like, all right, well, there's a good chance that this team's going to be tired. Maybe the team that's not as good and as the good young player can keep it closer than you'd typically expect. And that could be a way to get some, to showcase some of these guys who you want people to see.
Now, see, like I think you got to remove back to backs from every single national TV appearance. Like,
that's fair.
Don't put the Spurs, like, for starters, don't put the Spurs on national television just because it's death. Like, Spurs fans, I love you, and you love feeling like you're disrespected. So why don't we just go with it, right? Like, the Spurs don't want to be on national television, and the fans want to feel like they're crapped on by not being on more national television appearances. Like, let's just not put them on. The second thing is, if you're going to put them on, don't put them on back-to-back. But that's just ridiculous because you're just asking for those players to sit. And you can say, yeah, but the Spurs are really competitive. Well, that's great, but people aren't going to tune in because they're like, oh, Duncan's not playing. I'm not tuning into this. Like, no person, man or woman, is sitting alone in their apartment going, you know, I know Duncan's not playing, but those Spurs are, like, the casual fans aren't doing that. If you're a Spurs fan or if you're, like, an addict, but you're already getting those guys. You need to put the teams in the best possible position. Like, if I hear a team's on back-to-back, I automatically start dialing out in terms of, oh, I don't really need to pay attention to this game. Like, last year, I think there was a Clippers-Warriors game that was, like, the Clippers were on a back-to-back. And I was like, well, they're going to get rolled. Like, I only casually paid attention to it, and they got rolled. Like, it just, that's the way it works. And so, I don't think they ever need to be, because if a team goes on national television and then gets absolutely slaughtered, well, that teaches you something, right? Like, they're not ready. Like, we put them in a spotlight position and they completely failed. We're not going to put them on. Like, that should count against you in the future. But then teams, likewise, like, if you'd shown Portland more last season or even the season before, you would have had a better shot of being able to say, like, oh, like, this is, like, a team that's going to capture people's attention. And so there wouldn't be all this, like, who the hell is Damian Lillard? Like, there's a lot of that. Like, people just don't follow college basketball or the NBA until these guys are on the main stage. So it took a long time for people to go, oh, Damian Lillard. And there's people that are like, who's Chandler Parsons? And I'm like, Parsons has been good for 3 years. Like, why do you people not know this?
All right, so Christmas. I really dislike the Christmas schedule this year. I get that first game's like a throwaway, but putting the Knicks on against the Wizards was just completely unnecessary. The Knicks didn't need to be on Christmas this year. 2:30 is good. Thunder Spurs, that's one of the main ABC games. Cavs Heat, I get it, but I think you could have showcased someone else in your main time slot. I don't think you needed the Heat there. Lakers Bulls, that 8, that's awful. I mean, you couldn't have picked the worst game. And then the late game, Warriors Clippers, is good. If you could have thrown that in at 8 o'clock, I actually think that would have been a better. Did you like the Christmas Day schedule?
So it's kind of a tough one because the Christmas one, more than anything, is one where you want to attract the absolute most viewers. And to do that, you need markets and you need stars. And part of the problem is all the stars have migrated to those markets. So if you don't have Carmelo Anthony on, you're missing out. Like, let's take the Wizards, right? Like, what are some teams that would be like a good – because you need 2 East teams for that first one because it's 12 p.m., which is way too early on the West Coast for dragging a team out there, especially on Christmas. So, like, what are your options then, right? You're looking at – like, you can do Nets-Knicks, but that really disappointing to ever. Right, exactly. No. So even if you're doing the Wizards, like, who are you looking at? Like, Toronto? Like, no one knows who's on Toronto. Sorry, it's just, like, that's the reality. I think Toronto probably needs more attention, but Toronto doesn't have a megastar. Kyle Lowry is a star. DeMar DeRozan is a star. They don't have a super or megastar, and you need those guys, right? Like, John Wall kind of qualifies. And you can say Kyle Lowry is better than John Wall. That's absolutely true. Wall has more star power. Like, we're talking about very subjective stuff here, stylistic stuff, and not necessarily actual production.
Wouldn't have that been a good spot to put the Heat?
Like Heat Wizards or something like that?
Yeah, Heat Wizards and have a better game in your main time slot.
Well, the big key there is that you want the two ABC games, right, are 2:30 and 5.
Yeah.
That's your prime time. So LeBron's playing then. And so you could put, like, you could have made it Wizards Knicks, but that doesn't have the storyline appeal of him versus his old team. Like, I agree, it's a little bit overwrought, but I get that decision. There's really not a game that I look at on the schedule and go, I can't justify that. Like, the Knicks are just going to play. Like, they just are. Like, if the Knicks had lost Melo, then, yeah, probably you could justify moving the Knicks, and that's probably going to wind up as, like, Nets, Wizards. But the problem is, like, in the Eastern Conference, you've got Cavs with LeBron, the Heat with Wade, the Knicks with Melo, and then after that, like, what are you looking at? You're looking at the Wizards with Wall, and then it's the Raptors with Lowry, the Hawks with Horford, the Hornets with Stevenson and Jefferson. Like, I probably would have put the Hornets on. That's one thing I would have done, just because I think they're going to be good. Like, I would have gambled and been like, man, you got Al Jefferson, Lance Stevenson, and the Hornets have the cool new logo. Like, that would be okay.
And Hornets Wizards would have been good. That noon one, it's kind of a throwaway too, if we're being honest. That's the least that the noon and the 10:30 are the two. Those are the biggest throwaways.
And yet, I'm pretty sure, like, that Wizards. I will bet that Wizards next game will get a better rating than Thunder Spurs. I would put money that Knicks Wizards, even at that early time slot, even with half of the country basically opening Christmas presents, will still do better than Thunder Spurs. Like, having looked at both ratings information and internal metrics for several years across several sites on what the Spurs' attention pool is, like, people just don't, like, people respect the Spurs. People admire the Spurs. People idolize the Spurs. But nobody's like, God, I can't wait. This is going to be so great to watch. You know, the Spurs. No, like, that just doesn't happen. Like, the geeks get excited about it because we get excited about good basketball. But the casual fan just simply isn't excited by them anymore. Versus, like, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be like, yeah, Kobe versus Rose. And, like, the Bulls are going to beat the crap out of them. Like, they're just going to beat the crap out of the Lakers.
Yeah, that's why I would have put the Bulls against the Cavs in that 5 p.m. game. Warriors Clippers at 8, and then I was thinking, like, Rockets Mavericks late, but if you want to have the Lakers in there because of their name, you throw Mavericks Lakers to keep LA in there too. I mean, you're still getting the LA market at 8 p.m. if you have the Clippers on there.
See, I would have done Warriors Clippers at the 8. That's what I would have done.
Yeah,
I would do 2.
Agree.
And I would have done Lakers Bulls as a nightcap. That's what I would have done. Or I would have had the Bulls at the Lakers and done them as a nightcap. Because, like, but again, you're looking at, like, prime time Kobe versus, like, you have to pull back from what we know is, like, knowledgeable, or at least informed, maybe not knowledgeable, informed.
Don't, like, give us too much credit.
Right, basketball fans. And you have to look at it from, like, this base. Like, what's, like, the 12 o'clock game is Melo versus Wall in a battle of Eastern Conference contenders as Phil Jackson's Knicks take on the upstart, you know, Washington Wizards led by John Wall and Bradley Beal. Like, that's, you can sell that. The Thunder, it's a Western Conference Finals rematch as the Thunder and Spurs continue their rivalry between Kevin Durant and Tim Duncan, even though, like, those two have no rivalry whatsoever. And then you've got, like, Cavs Heat's pretty obvious, right? Like, LeBron returns to South Beach to take on his former teammates in Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. You've got Kobe Bryant travels to the Windy City to take on the Chicago Bulls. Like, that's the thing. Like, all the promotion for that game is going to be Kobe versus Powell and Kobe versus Rose. It's going to have nothing to do with anybody else. Because, like, what else are you going to say about the Lakers? Like, what? Like, Carl? Carlos Boozer returns to Chicago to take on, no, no one cares. Or like, what, like Jordan Hill faces off with Joakim Noah. Like, no, like no one, no, no one cares. And then like Warriors Clippers is actually like, that's a really sexy game. Like that, I'm actually surprised that that one got bumped to the 10:30. And it shows you really how slow people are to latch on to both the Warriors and the Clippers. Because like Curry is this transcendent inferno star that sports fans really know, but he hasn't crossed over to like mainstream people. Like my mom doesn't know who Steph Curry is probably. She does. She pays enough attention now. But
my mom doesn't, so right. You're covered.
You know, and like people are just really slow to embrace the Clippers. They're just really painfully slow to embrace this team. And it's not because of Sterling, because there's bad owners all over the place in sports and teams still follow them. It's just because they've always been the Clippers. They've always been the Lakers' little brother. So there's this real reticence to attach to them. And that, I think, kind of shows, like, the league is like, we should push Warriors-Clippers because this is an intense rivalry between two really good teams featuring superstars. And yet the public continues to be like, eh, like, cool. But they're not like, whoa. Which it should be. Like, this is a whoa matchup. Like, Clippers-Warriors is one that, like, that can have seeding implications. Lakers-Bulls does not have seeding implications 5 months later.
See, my last name ends with an M-A-N, so I don't celebrate Christmas. But I had a buddy's house who I used to go to. And so this is the thing with Christmas. Do the matchups matter? Or, I mean, we basically just throw on the TV, we sit around, and we would drink as much beer as we possibly could. And the couple of us there who cared about basketball would pay attention. And everyone else just kind of goes around and does their own thing. I mean, I would think most households are like that. Like, you just throw on the NBA games. It's live sports because there's going to be a guy there who wants to watch it. And everyone else just kind of does their own thing.
Well, there's part of that. So I think like a good way to put it is my father-in-law has coached basketball, boys and women and girls, and track and volleyball in high school. And he's a pretty good sports fan, and he loves college basketball, and he's been following sports for a long, long time. He's very ambivalent about the NBA and really was dismissive of it until I came along, and out of respect to me, he's, like, shown an interest. But, like, my father-in-law is, like, the guy that you're trying to capture. It's that, oh, like, there's a game on while the rest of the family is in, the dining room either finishing up dinner or making cookies or doing whatever family stuff. And you're trying to suck him in to the point where he's, like, oh, that was a really good game. And he thinks to himself, I got to watch those NBA games on Thursday. Like, that's what you're trying to convert people, basically. I guess there's a good comparison. The Christmas Day games for the NBA are the television sports equivalent of clickbait. You're trying to pull them in and get them to come back to your site as somewhere. You're trying to convert people into people that come back and go to your content consistently. You're trying to convert people, and it works also, like, it's also effective with kids, right? Like, the kids are, they're playing with toys in the living room, there's a game on, they get sucked in, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I like the NBA now, and they get interested in it. That's what you're trying to convert, and that helps with your branding. So, like, that's, like, really, I think, the goal of it, you know, that, I think, is the primary thing, because you've got people that are off of work watching sports that you're trying to convert into being a bigger fan of the NBA, not just on that day, but overall. And you want to make it part of the tradition, right? Like, you're trying to make it to where everyone goes, oh, it's so much fun. Like, we watched the game last year. And then next year, you're like, oh, we should watch the game again because we watched it last year. You're trying to make it into, like, a tradition, the way that the NFL dominates Thanksgiving.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Christmas to the NBA is the NFL to Thanksgiving. All right, enough holiday stuff because now I want the holidays to be here soon. 8-day All-Star break. Fan or not a fan?
I'm a fan. You know, with LeBron and Kobe both mentioning it last year, it was pretty clear that they'd spoken to the commissioner and had made it clear that this needed to be a priority. I think that they come back off of these breaks and they always seem to be just in better moods and it's better for them mentally. I think it'll be good to provide them with these kind of breaks. We'll have to see kind of how it goes in terms of how guys conduct themselves and what they do and, you know, how they come back and what performances are after the break. I think that'll be something interesting to watch. But, like, overall, I don't think it hurts anything. Increasing the back-to-backs, I think, is worrisome because it's, you know, so many guys talk about getting injured because they're worn down from the season and you've built in a bigger break in the middle, but is 8 days going to make up for the following 3 months of intense work, especially Like if you're, I haven't looked at the schedule, but if you're a team that's got a high end number of back to backs in the back half of your schedule, it's going to be tough, both from a competitive standpoint, and you're going to need to rest guys more because they're going to get worn down. So I think there's pros and cons to it. I think it's good for the players overall to try it. I would have rather have seen them actually just move All-Star to January and then put another break in early March. But that's where I end up. I think you need two breaks. I think that you need to have it be like, okay, if I can just get to January, 10th, we'll be okay. I just got to make another 10 days. And then it needs to be play hard through January and February, get to the trade deadline, and then go here. It does help with the trade deadline, though, because basically it's just going to be, with no team business going on, it's just going to be guys like GMs talking and a bunch of more rumors. It's going to be great for my business. It's awesome for us because just more attention on the trade deadline, which is what you want.
I kind of like your idea for a second break. And you know what would be kind of cool is if they did it at the trade deadline and had a 3 or 4 day break right when the trade deadline was going to hit. And that would also give them the opportunity maybe so players wouldn't miss games when they were traded. They could get the physicals and everything in also.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, they talked about, LeBron had mentioned last year at All-Star about wanting another break. I just think that, you know, especially, LeBron last year is in a position that a lot of guys find themselves in, and the Pacers are going to find this next year, right, where, George Hill is going to have to play an obscene amount of minutes because Paul George is off the court, so now you need another ball handler you can trust on the floor for longer periods of time. So, he's just going to have to play, David West, too. He's going to have to play more minutes to make up for Paul George. And in those situations, you get so worn down, it would be really helpful if you could be all right, we're going to have a break here to kind of lighten that load for you. And then the guy comes back, and then you can kind of coast out, maybe take some more games off, and then that guy gets a break later. I just think that having more breaks during the season is better for them. And we have the bye week that's spread out for the NFL. But maybe that's the idea too, right? It's just build more breaks into the schedule by team. So it's just the Heat have the week off this week. I don't think that'd be bad. Just have bye weeks from January through March where you're we're just going to, the Heat have off this weekend. Sometimes it actually works out with the schedule where it's a team that's no, we don't play until next Saturday. They need more of that where guys get uninterrupted time off. And in those situations, the coaches have got to be go home, do whatever. We're not practicing. Go chill. Just go relax.
Anything to keep these guys fresh throughout the season, I'm in favor of, is an increase in the level of play. You have anything that you're working on that you want to get out there?
We're doing off-season reports at CBS, and we're doing a bunch of companion pieces. Today's the Sixers, so I'm working on something today about can you tank the tank too far? James Herbert, who is a Harvard Paroxysm alumni, has a really great interview with Nerlens Noel. You guys should check out. On Paroxysm, what do we got going on? I'm not sure anybody's writing anything today on Paroxysm, but Nylon Calculus has some really cool stuff up. As we get closer to the season, we'll have a lot of stuff. You guys need to follow HPB Network on Twitter. We're adding another site. So it's going to be site, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's hard to even remember them all at this point, huh?
Site 6? Yeah, site 6. Should be launching in the next week and a half or so, pretty excited about that, and check out the Podium Game for podcasts like this one.
All right, keep an eye out for all that stuff. That wraps up the schedule podcast over at the Podium Game. I'm Brian Gibberman. That's Matt Moore, and we're done here.